Good morning and welcome to the Morning Report. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. It is Thursday, June 18th, and for the next half hour, we will be bringing you news from the Worcester TNG along with other local news services. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. This is Carla coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester. We are heading over to the phone line so Bill Ruggiero can tell us all about the weather. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Carla. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to a Thursday morning, the day before Juneteenth Day. Now, some of us got that off for the long weekend, and this weekend is also Father's Day. I want to wish all the dads out there, including mine, a happy Father's Day. And I've got to give you the latest weather forecast for today. We're going to have some morning showers and kind of gloomy out there. But then it's going to turn muggy, very, very impressive humidity this afternoon with showers and thunderstorms. Now, some of the storms that do develop this afternoon could be severe with strong gusty winds up to 65 to near 70 miles per hour in some areas of central Massachusetts and especially in western New England. And it could be some tree damage and there could be some power outages in some areas. Well, tonight the thunderstorms end. The low will be in the mid-50s. Now, tomorrow it's going to be much, much better. Highs in the mid-80s with less humidity. And we're going to be seeing that through the weekend. And then another storm from a tropical system coming through on Monday. And it could be really, really bad on Monday. So just thought I'd tell you so you all know that. And the thunderstorms are going to be occurring between noon and 4 p.m., so it's going to be the worst. So if you're out there walking or in a cab or just driving around, just be very careful. And some of the roads could be flooded, too.
I'd had not.
And now back to you, Carla.
Thanks, Bill. I didn't know that we were going to have that level of winds. So thanks for the heads up. I'll try and get my dog walk in earlier versus this afternoon, that's for sure.
Yeah. And dogs don't really like thunder and lightning.
Oh, she'll be in the basement for sure. So I appreciate the heads up. And I am wishing your father a happy Father's Day. I'm still thinking of him and sending him well wishes.
Yes. He is in rehab now.
Excellent.
So.
All right, Bill. You have a wonderful weekend, and thank you for all your information.
Okay, you too.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
All right, top story on the front page today. State poised to approve battery storage plant in Ocam. Written by Henry Schwann for the DNG. Despite objections from residents and town officials, the state has given tentative approval for a battery storage facility in Ocam. The Energy Facilities Siting Board made its decision June 15th after receiving more than 700 public comments, the majority from Ocam residents opposed to the project. The board meets June 25th when it could take a final vote on the proposed facility. "I'm not too thrilled about it," said Dennis Bergen, Oakman's Select Board Vice Chairman. "The state is way overstepping its bounds." The Siting Board is an independent state board that reviews proposed clean energy facilities, including battery storage. In a statement to the TNG, it said the tentative decision reflects careful consideration of all the evidence. It reads, in part, "The Moraga LLC project is still currently under EFSB review, and board members will be reviewing the tentative decision. As with all cases, the EFSB reviews the evidentiary record, which includes safety, environmental, impact standards, and requirements for approval of a zoning exemption before making a decision. If the board gives its final approval, Bergen said, the town could appeal to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court. OKM has spent $150,000 on legal fees fighting the project, primarily based on concerns that there is a history of battery storage fires that threaten public safety and the environment. Our next story, man found not guilty in Worcester State killing. Rodriguez acquitted of murder, but jury finds him guilty of two counts of owning a gun without a license. Written by Tony Kashi for the TNG. A jury Tuesday, June 16th, found Kevin J. Rodriguez not guilty of murder in the fatal shooting of Randy A. Melendez Jr., age 19, who was killed in October of 2023 on the Worcester State University campus. Lawyers for Rodriguez, age 21, of Lawrence, had argued during the Superior Court trial that Rodriguez shot Melendez in defense of a friend, Ruben Villa. Rodriguez was found guilty of two separate charges of owning a gun without a license. Jurors deliberated for almost 5 hours before delivering the verdict after 4 p.m. Rodriguez hung his head and wept after hearing the verdict as he stood between defense attorneys C. Henry Fazolt and Julia Reindler. There was also an emotional reaction from one of the 12 jury members after the verdict. Fazolt called the verdict appropriate when he spoke with a TNG reporter. This was a young man who was held for over 2.5 years, Fazolt said. The stress and pressure would cause an emotional reaction to anyone in that situation. I'm pleased with the jury for a very thoughtful and careful deliberation. Melendez died the morning of October 28, 2023, after being shot 3 times by Rodriguez. Fazolt said at the trial Rodriguez acted in defense of Villa, who was also shot after a fight in a university parking lot. Worcester judge gave gift to crime victim, spurring call for new trial, written by Brad Patrician for the Worcester TNG. A Worcester couple serving decades in prison for sex trafficking is arguing they deserve a new trial after prosecutors disclosed that the federal judge who oversaw the case passed them a handwritten card and gift meant for the victim during sentencing. Prosecutors, who were handed the gift from U.S. District Court Judge Margaret R. Guzman during a courtroom break, have agreed the couple, Moises and Kirsten Soto, are entitled to be resentenced but oppose a new trial. Quite wacky, Rosanna Cavallaro, a law professor at Suffolk University, said of the judge's actions, which she said clearly raises questions of impartiality. While it is not unusual for judges to address victims during sentencing in open court, Guzman's communication was passed along off the record without the defense's knowledge. Her lawyers said in violation of rules surrounding ex parte communications. The trial in this case was infected with demonstrable judicial bias, made apparent by the judge's unprecedented and improper behavior at sentencing, lawyers for the couple alleged in a lengthy court filing in which they argued the communication underscored broader bias. The Sotos were convicted of federally trafficking a woman across New England during a 6-day jury trial in September that Guzman presided over in U.S. District Court. Prosecutors alleged the victim, who testified at trial, was beaten and abused while trafficked by the couple into prostitution from February to May of 2022. Guzman sentenced both Moises and Kirsten Soto to 18 years in prison, 3 years above a mandatory minimum prison term they were facing. Court records indicate that prosecutors who had argued for 18 years were on a break at the sentencing hearing when a court staffer handed them an envelope they said Guzman wanted them to give the victim. Prosecutors said they opened the envelope after the hearing had concluded to find a bracelet and several seashells along with a card with a handwritten note from Guzman. every important journey in life starts with the first step, the note read. You have shown great courage in your own journey to reclaim your own life and your future. I wish you much joy, love, and happiness and peace. Court documents show prosecutors kept the gifts and card. 5 days later, the head of the office's narcotics and money unit disclosed what had happened to the Soto's defense lawyers in an email. The disclosure prompted the defense lawyers to file a motion for a new trial February 19th. Guzman, who was nominated to the bench by President Joseph Biden in 2022, recused herself the day after Wood in a new federal judge out of Boston, Myung J. Jun, was appointed. Our last story on the front page for today, June 18th, Department of Education looks to move core offices, written by Zachary Schimeli for USA Today. The U.S. Department of Education is preparing to move core functions of its special education and civil rights offices outside the agency, a seismic change that some advocates had warned could disrupt services for millions of students with disabilities. Education Secretary Linda McMahon said June 16th that the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services would enter into an agreement to outsource its programs to the Department of Health and Human Services. Her agency inked a similar deal to begin transferring its anti-discrimination work in the Office for Civil Rights to the Justice Department. These agreements align federal responsibilities with the agencies best positioned to support them, strengthening the effectiveness and impact of critical services, McMahon said in a statement. The Washington Post first reported the announcement. Agency officials stressed that the moves, which were immediately hailed by Republican lawmakers and castigated by Democratic ones, would have no impact on students and families who say they've experienced discrimination. Critics, including special education advocates and the Education Department's union, strongly disagreed. We are turning the page to local news. Top story on the local news page, counselors give unanimous support to $1 billion city budget, written by Afton Pratt. Worcester. The City Council unanimously voted to approve the fiscal 2027 budget, which begins July 1st, following debate about the role councilors play in developing the spending plan. The vote, which was first scheduled to take place during the June 2nd council meeting and postponed twice, was approved Tuesday, June 16th, after councilors questioned what abilities they have when it comes to cutting or adding to the budget. City Manager Eric DiBattista proposed a $1 billion budget at the beginning of May. Councilor-at-Large Satya B. Mitra, who is serving his first term on the council, asked Battista if councilors could have more input on the budget proposal before it appears on the council floor in future fiscal year budget plans. There are many things probably every one of us have in mind to suggest to the city manager, to add or to suggest to do a few things that would probably be best for the constituents, the residents, because we hear from them and we have the responsibility to pass it on to him, Mitra said. I'd like to see that we create an opportunity more officially so that we can let the city manager know how to add a few things based on our understanding. Mitra asked if he could make a motion to add $20 million to the loan order to the city's budget in order to fix potholes and cracks on major roadways. Mayor Joseph M. Petty and Mitra could request a report on how to finance similar projects in the future, but he could not add $20 million to the budget. Police filed charges in slaying on Sunrise Ave, written by Craig Seaman for the TNG. Worcester, a 77-year-old man has been charged in the fatal stabbing of his wife and the stabbing of his son in the home they all shared on Sunrise Ave. Harold E. Despin of 17 Sunrise Ave is charged with armed assault to murder and assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, a knife. The stabbings occurred Friday, June 12th. According to the statement of facts prepared by Worcester Police Sergeant Robert Molinari, officers responded to 17 Sunrise Ave shortly after 3:30 p.m. Friday, June 12th for a reported stabbing. Upon arrival, officers located the man's wife inside the residence with a stab wound to the neck. She was pronounced dead soon after by paramedics, according to Molinari's report. Despin, who was also in the home, admitted to stabbing his wife, Molinari reported. Despin's wife, Janice Despin, age 79, is listed in city assessor records as the owner of the house at 17 Sunrise Ave. In addition, police located the grown son of the Despins with a stab wound to the back, according to Molinari's report. The son informed neighbors and officers that he had been stabbed by Harold Despin, according to the police report. A neighbor said the son ran to his house at 21 Sunrise Ave in a panic June 12th. Ryan Shepard, the neighbor, was sleeping when someone barged in the front door screaming. At first, Shepard said, the son was frantic and hard to understand. After he helped to calm him down, Shepard said the son told him that his father had stabbed his mother. Shepard immediately called the police. He said there was a puddle of blood near his front door. According to neighbors, Sunrise Avenue is a quiet street, and the Despin family has been living there for close to 20 years. Moving on, Notre Dame Bell installed in Worcester Cemetery, written by Tony Kashi for the TNG. When the bell of the former Notre Dame des Canadiens Church was removed from its steeple in September 2018, it was seen as a piece of the city's history surviving an otherwise unsalvageable Worcester landmark. But the trek for the now 3,500-pound bell was just starting, even traveling across state lines for refurbishment. After multiple local efforts, it has finally grown roots at the Notre Dame des Canadiens Cemetery on Webster Street, its permanent home. It was a 7 years process, right in the middle of COVID, said Hope Cemetery Commissioner Chris Fosher. Its finalization of returning that bell to the French-Canadian community and the citizens of Worcester. The bell was first kept at the old National Guard building at Greenhill Park, but was then sent to Ohio for refurbishment, Fosher said. It stayed there almost 2 years, starting in 2020 for restoration. COVID-19 slowed the process. When the bell was sent back to Worcester in 2022, it sat in the Notre Dame's Des Canadiens Cemetery garage for a few years, with plans to display it as a centerpiece on the cemetery grounds. It was finally brought out Memorial Day 2025 to be displayed near the entrance of the cemetery where it still rests. June 13th, it was officially dedicated in a gathering of about 24 people. The plaque installed next to the display commemorates how the work to install the bell at its permanent home was a joint effort between the Harmony Club of Worcester, a business organization of people of French-Canadian descent, Opus Investment Management, and the Worcester Catholic Diocese. Our final story on the local page, responding to silent 911 call, Princeton police officers find a fire, written by Kinga Barandi for the TNG. When Princeton police received an open 911 call at shift change Monday night, June 15th, one without a caller at the other end of the phone line, two officers drove independently to the neighborhood to determine what was happening. The officers, one just starting his shift and the other just going off duty, rode in on a fire scene. The house at 132 Merrick Street was on fire with flames showing on the porch roof and licking at the interior walls. Garden furniture was involved and was still smoldering even after the flames had been extinguished, officials said. The officers, Joseph Ketchy and Robert Sargood, joined the homeowner and a neighbor spraying the flames with a garden hose in an attempt to contain the fire until firefighters arrived. My wife, Bonnie, noticed the commotion and saw the cruisers stop at our neighbor's house, said Charles Schmoll, the former Princeton police chief. Retired for 15 years, the chief said he jogged down the street to see if he could help. I was just being neighborly. Princeton Police Chief Paul Patriarca said the calls came in around 11 p.m. The homeowner was vague about how the fire started, and firefighters called in the state fire marshal to investigate the cause of the flames. There were no injuries reported. Today's obituaries, we have Carol A. McGrath, Lester. Carol A. McGrath, age 69, died Saturday, June 13th, surrounded by her family at UMass Memorial Medical Center Memorial Campus. Born in Worcester, she was a graduate of Lester High School, class of 1974, and graduated from Salter Secretarial School. She then attended Westfield State College, where she was on the dean's list. Carol worked for the town of Lester doing secretarial work, retiring in 2015. After retirement, she worked part-time for 6 years at Worcester County Memorial Park, Paxton, as a bookkeeper. She was a former longtime member of the Lester Mothers Club and a volunteer for the Lester Little League. That is Carol A. McGrath. Paul Henry Pratt, Worcester. Paul Henry Pratt passed away peacefully June 14, 2026, at the age of 96. After high school, Paul served in the United States Coast Guard and then resumed the work he began at the age 13 at his Uncle Joe Scannell's business, A.C. Bowler, an electric supply company on Green Street in Worcester. Paul worked there for 60-plus years. He especially enjoyed assisting many Worcester County electricians in electrical decisions and work plans throughout that time. Paul was an enthusiastic father, an avid outdoor enthusiast throughout his life. He often spent his lunch hours at the Worcester Public Library planning outdoor explorations, celebrations, and adventures. With his family, Paul enjoyed hiking in the White Mountains, body surfing at the National Seashore, and playing pickup hockey games on local lakes and ponds, and biking throughout Worcester County. One noteworthy ride was he and his son Paul's day-long ride around the Quabbin Reservoir. Paul also enjoyed golfing at Greenhill Park with his brother Bob. Paul was a kind person who always enjoyed helping others. He took great pride in caring for his Rochelle Street home, where he lived for 62 years. There, he raised his family, hosted wonderful celebrations, played bridge, and contributed to his nearby parish, St. George's Church. That is Paul Henry Pratt. We are turning over to the Worcester Guardian for a few headlines. Batista touts Worcester's financial stability, future growth in State of the City address. Financial stability, infrastructure investment, and optimism about Worcester's future took stage Wednesday as City Manager Eric Batista delivered his third annual State of the City address at City Hall. Speaking a day after the City Council approved Worcester's first $1 billion budget, Batista said the city is better positioned than many in Massachusetts communities to weather economic uncertainty while continuing to invest in services, housing, infrastructure, and public safety. Batista began by describing the annual address as an opportunity to update residents and stakeholders on city initiatives and accomplishments. He praised the council, state legislature, business leaders, and municipal employees for their role in helping move Worcester forward. 2 years ago, Batista said Worcester was entering an era of opportunity that will lead to an era of accomplishment. Now, he said, much has been accomplished, but new challenges have emerged. decisions are playing out at a national and global scale that have impacted us here in central Massachusetts. It's been a time of change that requires bold action. Fortunately, Worcester has a history of not just facing change, but being at the forefront of it, he said. And we will just look at five fun things to do this weekend. Countless reasons to say Oppa, one of Worcester's longest-running cultural celebrations, returns Friday to Sunday at the St. Spyridon Greek Festival, takes over Russell Street across from Elm Park. Number two, on wristband, dozens of delectable temptations. For one evening, Shrewsbury Street transforms into a mile-long tasting menu as nearly 30 restaurants serve up samples on the annual Taste of Shrewsbury Street. Number three, a passport for your ears. Take a musical journey across the Near and Middle East when the Ed Malikian Ensemble performs at the WCUW Front Room. Number four, more than a holiday, a history lesson in motion. Worcester's Juneteenth observance spans 2 days of celebrations. And finally, chrome, horsepower, and dad jokes encouraged. The third annual Father's Day car show rolls into Off the Rails on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. You've been listening to The Morning Report, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android. This has been Carla. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Hello. A lot of people are familiar with various assistance programs that provide support for folks with disabilities, money troubles, or food insecurity. But did you know there's one organization which does good work on all three fronts? Welcome to the Department of Transitional Assistance. The DTA serves 1 in 7 residents of the Commonwealth with direct economic assistance like cash benefits and SNAP food assistance, as well as workforce training opportunities. Those served by the department include children, elders, and people with disabilities. And despite the misconceptions you might have heard, many of those who receive benefits from the government work regularly and are gainfully employed. The DTA mission is to assist and empower low-income individuals and families to meet their basic needs, to improve their quality of life, and achieve long-term economic self-sufficiency. The DTA assistance line is open from 8:15 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. That number is 877-382-2363. 877-382-2363.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.